You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Locked On Broncos podcast, hosted by Cody Rourke and Cameron Parker of Predominantly Orange, your daily Broncos podcast.
Everybody, welcome to the Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Broncos crossover podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg, Spike Friedman, and Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos. This is exciting because we're getting our first real football this week. The Seahawks go to Denver to play the Broncos this Sunday in the afternoon slot. And so we decided to come together and try to bring some different perspectives from different teams. And so hopefully, you know, we'll bring some insight that you really didn't get before from different local guys. So first off, you know, Cody, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, man. You know, I appreciate you guys having me here on these crossovers. Anytime we get a chance to sit down, do a crossover show, get the other side of, the opponent, the different perspective, it really makes a big difference. And I think the fans and the listeners of the shows really love that other side.
Yeah, I agree. And Spike, I know you're calling in from the car again. You're laying it all on the line. I hope that we can finish this podcast out with no life-threatening events.
I got a good feeling about it, if I'm being totally honest. And beyond that, I'm excited to get in. The Broncos, even though that rivalry between the Seahawks and Broncos isn't what it used to be when we were in the same division, I still feel it every time we go to whatever Mile High Stadium is called these days. I still feel that anger inside of me. So I'm excited for this matchup. I think it's a great way to start the season with two teams that are, you know, bigger question marks than maybe they have been in past seasons.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I think one of the biggest things, too, is there's a new identity. It seems like there's a new identity with the Seattle Seahawks. Following the offseason that they had, you know, a lot of people have written them off. And I don't think that should be something that's talked about, because the Seattle Seahawks are always a dangerous team, in my honest opinion, with some of the talent that they still have there, some of the new young talent they've acquired, which we're going to talk about here. In tonight's show, you're going to hear from me talking about the Seattle Seahawks, asking questions for what we're going to see from the Seahawks for all you Denver listeners. And obviously the Locked On Seahawks guys are going to ask about the Denver side of the ball, what to expect in this Sunday's matchup, Broncos and the Seahawks in Denver at Broncos Stadium, Mile High, 2:25 p.m. Mountain Time kickoff. And if you're not at the stadium, you can obviously catch all the action on Fox, national televised game of the afternoon. So it's a big matchup. It is, and I tell you what, with all the offseason hype between both teams, I feel like both teams had a pretty decent offseason.
Yeah, and I think for us it starts with you guys at quarterback. Obviously, you got a new guy into the position. How optimistic are you that you've maybe found the answer after a couple of years of Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, a bunch of question marks at quarterback? Now you've got Case Keenum in there. How are you feeling about that?
You know, I think there's a growing sense of optimism around Broncos country right now, specifically because Case Keenum has come in right away, and you can tell his effect on the players has been tremendous. His leadership impact, you know, he's always been a leader wherever he's been, and I think he's not necessarily the guy that has all the star power, but he's a guy that commands the huddle, and the Broncos haven't had that in the last 3 years since Peyton Manning was the quarterback, and they really didn't have that with Trevor Siemian. A lot of Broncos quoted Trevor Siemian as being the guy who's just too quiet in the huddle. He's a guy that when things are going wrong, you look to him, and he wasn't the guy you were getting your hope from. And, you know, the Paxton Lynch thing, when it was him, it didn't work out. When it was Brock Osweiler, it just didn't work out in that way. Right now, Emmanuel Sanders, one of the Broncos' top receivers, he says there's a night and day difference. He hasn't had this type of feeling with a quarterback since Peyton Manning, and I think that's a pretty big testament to how the offensive players really view how Case Keenum has come in this offseason and has transformed the culture of that offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, it's something I've noticed with Keenum. He really embodies the kind of veteran presence. He brings that really wherever he's gone in the last few years. He brought that in Minnesota, just the steadiness at the quarterback position. Like you said, he doesn't do is not asked of him. Mm-hmm. And he's a very steadying guy, and he's a veteran. He's going to get the job done. And I think those are the types of quarterbacks to give Seattle issues because you don't expect a whole lot. So when, you know, they do their job and they do the right thing, it kind of infuriates fans, Seahawks fans, because, you know, you expect the defense to be good and kind of shut down these quarterbacks. And I think this year, obviously, with the departure of so many talented players on the defensive side of the ball, we're going to be seeing some quarterbacks maybe around Keenum's talent level and just that kind of quarterback be more prolific against this defense.
One, I think, too, you know, I think the expectation is for Case Keenum, he doesn't have to come into this season or even as the quarterback for the Broncos, and he doesn't have to put up numbers like throwing 36 touchdowns, 40 touchdowns, you know, 4,500 yards passing. I don't think that's the expectation. I think the expectation for him is to obviously lead the offense down and convert on, you know, in red zone opportunities. The Broncos were one of the worst teams last year in the red zone. With Case Keenum, they get a little bit of a more dynamic quarterback who's a little bit smarter than Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler down there, and he's got a multitude of targets this year at the receiver position, an area the Broncos didn't have depth at last year. They had Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas. Teams would bracket cover Demaryius Thomas, leave Emmanuel Sanders open underneath, and he'd start to hurt defenses, so they'd have to go with the two high safety look most of the time against these guys. But the only problem was for Denver last year, outside of not having a quarterback, they didn't have a reliable tight end option. They didn't have a reliable number three option. Right now, the Broncos, in this year's draft, the 2018 rookie class, added two very prolific young wide receivers in Cortland Sutton out of SMU and Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State. Both of these guys have been a tremendous impact in camp when the defenses have focused on Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. They've been the ones that have made plays, and we saw that week in and week out. You know, we saw it against the Washington Redskins week three of the preseason. Cortland Sutton was having a field day the previous week against the Chicago Bears. Deshaun Hamilton was having a good week as well. And I think overall, the Broncos have confidence there. Jeff Heirman has stepped up as a tight end for the Broncos this year. Kind of came out of nowhere. He was a guy they drafted a couple years ago. He tore his ACL during rookie minicamp in 2015. And really, the expectations for him were kind of disappointing the last couple of years. But this year, he emerged as the number one tight end. Experienced some knee soreness, sat out some training camp, but came back in preseason against the Bears, and he looked phenomenal. He's earned that job, and they're going to use a combination of him and Jake Butt from Michigan that they had last year. They pretty much rested him due to an ACL he suffered in a bowl game the year he went in the draft. He would have been, I believe, a third-round pick. And, you know, they're going with a young guy now in Matt Lacoste, who really had a tremendous preseason with Chad Kelly, and he was the most consistent blocking tight end receiving threat. So they have options now in the red zone, which almost makes it, with Bill Musgrave and his system, a pick-your-poison approach.
And you guys have new weapons at the running back position as well. How excited are you about Royce Freeman taking that job? As I understand it, he's won that job. I know there's going to be a committee to a degree with Devontae Booker, but how excited are you about Freeman and this post-CJ Anderson era?
Oh, man, I can tell you what. I'm very excited about Royce Freeman, and one of the biggest reasons why is I've had the opportunity to watch him at the University of Oregon for 4 years when I was living in Oregon. Being able to watch him firsthand, he stepped up as a true freshman at Oregon with Marcus Mariota. He had to learn how to pass pro, and he had to learn how to be that dynamic guy, that reliable dump-off target out of the backfield, and that power runner. And so the Broncos, really, you know, if you go back to one of my pinned tweets on Twitter at Cody Rourke NFL, one of the things I said before it even happened is, John Elway, please draft Royce Freeman. And then it ended up happening, I think, probably 30 minutes afterwards. I'm not saying I had any effect on that, but I was excited. Royce Freeman, though, he's looked electric in camp. He's the most consistent tailback, the most patient. He hits the hole. He's the power runner. Now, you mentioned a running back by committee approach, and this is what Vance Joseph wants for the Broncos, and here's how they're going to work it out a little bit. Royce Freeman's going to get a majority of the carries primarily. He's going to have the guy with the most carries, and they're going to utilize Philip Lindsay, who is an undrafted free agent, a local CU guy at the University of Colorado, and he's going to be in on passing situations. They want to really dump the ball off to him. They want to motion him out to a trip side where they're empty, and they want to throw a quick screen to him. They want to throw a swing, or they want to get him open in space one-on-one against a linebacker. That's one of the fortes they want with him, and I think primarily they want to utilize Devontae Booker as that third down tailback that they really need. So they're going to go with a running back by committee approach, but to be honest with you, Royce Freeman, he is a very durable guy, over 900 carries in 4 years at the University of Oregon. He's proven he can stay healthy. He's proven he can be a bell cow type guy, and I think that's what the Broncos see.
Yeah, I think the last question before we take a quick break, Vance Joseph heading into year two, what are some of the differences between his first year with the Broncos and the team right now under his watch?
Well, I think it really does go back to the personnel that you have. Like quarterback, we were talking about that. You didn't really have options at quarterback. I felt like Vance Joseph's hands were tied a little bit last year, worrying about the quarterback situation. To be honest with you, the Broncos had nobody. No viable option there. Your first-round pick and Paxton Lynch wasn't working out, and he got injured the one time he did start a game, and he didn't last against the Oakland Raiders. You know, Trevor Siemian, he was the one-trick pony. And then Brock Osweiler was the one guy that, you know, probably showed the most flash last year out of all the quarterbacks. That was a big dynamic of it. The Broncos' offense was very one-sided. You know, like I mentioned earlier, they only had Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas. They had other weapons. You know, Benny Fowler couldn't catch the ball. Cody Latimer couldn't make the most of his opportunities. And with Virgil Green, he wasn't a true receiving threat at tight end, so their offense was very one-dimensional. And the defense, they kind of took a couple steps back last year. They had some key injuries in the secondary with Justin Simmons late in the year. And then on the D-line, they had some guys bouncing back between some injuries. Shane Ray missed the first 8 weeks of the season last year due to a wrist surgery. Those were some of the things there. But, you know, I just had the opportunity to be at Broncos training camp this summer, and one thing I noticed about Vance Joseph is he's making those bold decisions that most people wanted him to make last year. You know, after a bad game or a bad couple games in a row, the Broncos lost 8 in a row at one point. You know, they would ask him questions about, are you looking at a change? And he said, you know, we'll have to see. Well, this year he's been more upfront about, you know what, we are making this change. This is why we've done it. So he's gotten a little bit more confident. And I think in that transition from year one to year two as a head coach, you know, I think he knows that the pressure is on. If the Broncos continue to struggle, I think he's going to feel like, you know, the seat is really hot for him. And that's something I think that he's really changed this year, is just he seems more urgent, and he's on the team about being more urgent. That's one of the words you're going to hear at training camp and around practice, is urgency and tempo and effort. Those are the three things.
Yeah, with Pete Carroll, it's more like, I'm just so amped, I'm jacked, I'm just so pumped. A lot of expressive words with Pete Carroll, just the utmost positivity from our side. But yeah, that was great. I think you provided a lot of really good insight for our listeners on Locked On Seahawks to get a better idea of what to expect from the Denver Broncos. But now we're going to flip the switch. After this short break, Cody's going to take this panel, and he's going to ask us some questions about the Seattle Seahawks. So stay tuned for more of the Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Broncos crossover on the Locked On Podcast Network.
We're a few days away, actually, from the Broncos Seahawks kicking off action at Broncos Stadium at Mile High. The Broncos in this game are 3-point favorites in the betting odds. And if you're confident in the Broncos odds, you got to go all in. If you're confident in the Seahawks stealing one, you better bet on it with MyBookie. MyBookie is the one-stop shop for reliable sports betting, and they offer a variety of amazing features. You can make live in-game bets, or you can even bet the over and the under on how many fantasy points a player might score. And the best thing about MyBookie is that when you win, you get paid. No more waiting long periods of time to get your payout. They pay you instantly. And MyBookie has been so reliable for me, which is why we are recommending them to you, the listener of Locked On Broncos, Locked On Seahawks. All you got to do is you lay down some cash and you can win big today. And if you join now, MyBookie, they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. And you can do that by using promo code Locked On. That's one word, Locked On, to activate this special offer today. And once again, if you go to MyBookie online today and you sign up, you got to use promo code Locked On in order to claim this offer. You play, you win, and you get paid with MyBookie. You gave a little bit of insight on the Broncos side of the ball, offensively, defensively, a lot of changes. But when we talk about changes, you know, Grant and Spike, I think we look at the Seahawks, and I think they're the definition of change in this offseason. And to be honest with you, looking at it, there's been a lot of media and a lot of people in the NFL community that have looked at the Seahawks and have written them off, essentially, especially as other teams in the division have gotten stronger. The Rams getting stronger on paper. The Cardinals, you never know what's going on with them. They get David Johnson back, and they have, obviously, you know, Sam Darnold, not Sam Darnold, they have a Josh Rosen at quarterback, Sam Bradford at quarterback as well. You have these teams, and you have the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo, who had a really strong finish to the season last year. The division gets tougher, and I think the Seahawks get lost in a lot of that. But right now, it's really evident that this team rides on the shoulders of Russell Wilson as their primary leader. So I ask you the questions here. Following the departure of Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, and you got to factor in the considerment of, you know, Cam Chancellor retiring, what other realms of leadership are there right now amongst the Seahawks team?
I'd say, you know, first and foremost, Bobby Wagner has really taken that leadership role on the team alongside a guy who just came back today or yesterday, if we're going to release it tomorrow, Earl Thomas. And so those are really the two, you know, fundamental leaders, the guys that the other guys look to on the defense for direction to get everybody in the right place, and they get everybody fired up. And they set the example with their play, both all pros, both arguably, in our minds, the best at their positions. And so those are really the two guys that the Seahawks look to as leaders on that side of the ball.
And I think that's important. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that the notion of leadership with this team, the guys that have left, I mean, it's amazing to think about. They've lost, if you include K.J. Wright and the potential Earl Thomas doesn't start week one, you're talking about seven all-pros missing from last year's first week roster on just the defensive side of the ball alone. But when you talk about leadership, some of the comments coming out of camp last year and through the offseason this year were that maybe Pete Carroll had lost the team. And so the question of veteran leadership, how valuable that was to the Seahawks, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman were absolutely leaders on this team. Were they leading the team in the right direction? It's an interesting question. And I love those two guys. And I don't want to say that they were the problem, because I don't believe that. But my question is, were they moving in lockstep with Pete Carroll anymore? And I think the answer is clearly not. So maybe there was too much leadership in a weird way, which is a crazy problem to have with an NFL team. But I think this Seahawks defense was maybe that rare example of too many leaders. And as Grant said, Bobby Wagner is the guy on that side of the ball now.
He really is. Yeah. I think you make a great point there, talking about Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, very outspoken characters, you know, on the team and across the NFL. They're very outspoken. And I think the Broncos almost did the same thing with Aqib Talib, a great player, great leader. But at times that leadership became a little bit more divisive. The Broncos offense and the Broncos defense had a lot of, you know, bad blood towards each other. And I think a lot of that was fueled by Aqib Talib. I think that's one of the reasons he's no longer in Denver. But, you know, you mentioned the news about Earl Thomas, and, you know, he ended his holdout today. A wild day in the NFL, but you know, I think if people have followed him on Instagram, it appears that he's been putting a lot of work in. Do you guys see any delays with him this Sunday after really not being around his teammates, practicing all camp and all offseason? And if not, who's another safety that has been getting all of those reps?
Yeah, I mean, in our case, I'm not too worried because he played so much of the season with Bradley McDougal last year. Other guys who'd gotten the reps, Tedrick Thompson was getting reps, but he was injured at the end of training camp, the end of the preseason. So he was a question mark coming in, which left the team looking at maybe someone who was basically a street free agent who they traded for, so not a free agent, but someone who they basically pulled off the scrap heap and Shalom Luani. Mo Alexander, they actually cut. He was expected to be competing for that second safety role. Delano Hill looked frankly awful this preseason, a guy who they drafted last year. So it was really Tedrick Thompson was the only option alongside Bradley McDougal who looked like he could maybe make an impact, but he had two separate injuries coming out of this preseason. So it is a godsend that Earl Thomas is going to play, and I think he has to slot in this week, given that he knows this system and he's played alongside McDougal and Shaquille Griffin so much over the last year.
Yeah, and even if Earl can't go, which I think is unlikely, Tedrick Thompson was a full participant in practice today, which is really good, especially in a case where, you know, you don't know 100% if Earl's ready to go. Sorry. And as far as Earl being ready, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on the podcast, but if there's ever an athlete that, you know, is going to be ready, whether or not he's in training camp or, you know, working out with his teammates, it's Earl Thomas. The dude just, you know, lives, breathes, you know, sleeps football. And, you know, he's always prepared. He's in great shape at all times, working out wherever he is. Well, now he's in Seattle, but, you know, throughout the offseason, throughout training camp, you know, he was living in the gym, according to. And so, you know, I really don't have any worries about Earl Thomas being ready to go.
Well, and I think that's going to be a key matchup. You know, I don't think it really makes a big difference necessarily. You know, a lot of times these holdouts in this situation play out exactly how they did. You either hold out all the way to the point where they trade you, or they hold out to the point where, like, okay, they're not going to trade me. They're not going to move anything. I've got a rapport or else I'm going to lose a lot of money. I think, you know, Earl Thomas is going to play really big. He's going to play with a big chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove that he deserves a contract. And if he's not going to get it with Seattle, he's essentially this season auditioning for another team, probably towards the end of the year, maybe even before the trade deadline. He's a guy that, you know, has just been an electric guy for the Seahawks, and it almost kind of sucks. You know, I'm a defensive back guy, but just seeing the Legion of Boom kind of be dismantled over the last couple of seasons, you know, terrible news with Cam Chancellor's retirement and his health and everything like that. It's definitely been a hard thing to watch as a guy who appreciates defensive backs and tough football. So that's been a big blow there. You know, we look at some departures from some of the veteran players. We look at some additions of some veteran players, but also the additions of some young guys. Now, Brandon Marshall, veteran wide receiver, former Denver Bronco, and this is going to be a matchup where we have essentially two Brandon Marshalls going against each other. They often get confused with one another. That's always a fun thing to watch on Twitter. And then you also have the additions of Shaquem Griffin and Rashad Penny, who had wrist surgery not too long ago. I was kind of thinking at the time when the news was announced by Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network that Penny wouldn't be ready to go at this point, but it looks right now like he's full go. How will some of these guys add to the new look the Seahawks have embodied this offseason, and who are some of the other younger guys that have stood out in preseason that are set to contribute during the regular season?
Well, I'd say Shaquem Griffin is put in a position to just show what he has to offer. He's filling in for an injured KJ Wright, and so he's got an opportunity to show what he showed in the preseason. He was flying all over the field, racking up tackles, fleeing to the ball. So I think that Shaquem is in a position where he can really surprise some people. There are going to be some growing pains with him, as there are for any rookie player. And as far as guys that come in and not a lot of talk is about them, Rashim Green has had a fantastic preseason. He's generated a bunch of quarterback pressures, sacks, quarterback hits, and he's really flashed for a guy that came in and had the reputation as, you know, a 20 or 21 year old guy who was raw, but, you know, really had some good stuff that he showed at USC. And so I think that, you know, he's surprised a lot of people with how quickly he's assimilated himself to the NFL level. And he's due to make an impact this year, especially on such a thin Seattle defensive line.
Well, yeah, and I'll throw out two more things. The first is the Rashad Penny, and I've harped on this. I did not like the pick at the time. If you're going to grab a first-round running back, it's got to be a generational talent. It's got to be Zeke Elliott. It's got to be Saquon Barkley. Otherwise, you are losing that, you know, the value of that first-round pick in terms of that fifth-year option, all those sorts of things. I would have so much rather had Royce Freeman later in the draft. I think they're comparable players. I mean, obviously they have different skill sets, but in terms of overall ceiling, they're comparable. And I'm very envious of Royce Freeman. I really like him as a player. The second guy, and I've hyped him all preseason, could not be more excited for the Michael Dixon punting experience. He is breaking records in the preseason. He is averaging 48 yards per punt. He has 9 different punts. He's going to pin you guys deep. You're going to hate Michael Dixon by the end of this week, and I'm going to love Michael Dixon every week for the rest of my life. So I could not be more excited about our fifth round punter. It's ludicrous, but he really is that good. The LeBron James of punting is the only comparison I'm willing to make with him.
Well, maybe if we see two offensive struggle with the Seahawks and the Broncos, it could be a battle of the punters, Marquette King versus, that's going to be crazy. Yeah. Both guys can punt the heck out of the ball. You know, I think that was a very impressive pickup. You know, it's one of those guys you spend later on. Don't be like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers getting a kicker in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. You know, but the punt game, you know, being able to flip field position is so critical. And that's one thing that Marquette King did this preseason for the Broncos is he flipped field position. And it's just like, it's almost like a cheat code, just being at altitude. And this is an opportunity for the Seahawks punter to absolutely boom kicks as well. And he's had a phenomenal NFL preseason as well. We've looked at some old guys that have come onto the Seattle Seahawks roster and Brandon Marshall. We're going to talk about some of the key matchups and keys to the game coming up here in segment number three of the show. But before we get to that, I'd like to tell you guys about the Locked On Network and what we have going on over here. They are expanding with college shows. And coming this week, we have Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes, and Locked On Seminoles. Plus, we are already locked on to the Ducks, the Nittany Lions of Penn State, the Baylor Bears, the Alabama Crimson Tide, and the Wildcats, and the Razorbacks, the Volunteers, and the Cougars. And you can find your favorite college show on the Locked On Podcast Network on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, or Spotify. Alrighty, some keys to the game. I think this is one of the most critical times to talk about what can win this game for both the Broncos and the Seahawks. And I want to get the Seahawks side of the ball first. You know, coming into this game, the Seahawks defense, you know, key departures of some defensive guys. What do you think the keys are for the Seahawks team coming against this Denver team that's got a new identity offensively, still very strong defensively? What do the Seahawks have to do on Sunday in order to have a chance to win this game?
Well, I'll start, and obviously one of them is, you know, protect Russell Wilson. That's it goes without saying. I'm going to harp on one thing, and it's a continuation of what Spike and you were talking about towards the end of the last segment. They need to take advantage of the field position that Michael Dixon is going to give them and really pin the Broncos deep and allow the defense a little more room for error. They have a lot of new faces, they have a lot of new guys, and they need to, you know, be able to play fast, play loose, and be able to afford to make some mistakes, because it's bound to happen.
Yeah, and I'll add that last year the running game for the Seahawks was abysmal. I mean, you look at their red zone production, and they had zero rushing touchdowns from their running backs last year in the red zone. That is zero rushing touchdowns from their running backs in the red zone last year. It is a shocking statistic. And if you watch the games, it's not actually that shocking because they were so ineffective running the ball. You've got a new offensive line coach in Mike Solari. You've got new talent in Rashad Penny. You have Chris Carson healthy again. He was the most effective runner last year when he was healthy. I think that, and look, I don't think that running the ball is the most effective technique, especially against a defensive line as good as the Broncos. That said, the Seahawks have to be able to get something from the running game. And we have to start seeing it so that they can build on that. There can be some progression there. And hopefully, you know, less complicated blocking schemes with Solari will free up our talented but maybe not the most technically sound offensive line to be effective, get some holes open, and we can see something. So what I'm looking for is one rushing touchdown from the running backs. I'd love to see it. Just start week one, get a rushing touchdown. You can do it, boys. Love to see that.
Well, and I think when we look at this matchup, if I'm the Seahawks, if I'm Pete Carroll, I'm taking a shot here, and I'm looking at the Broncos defensive line, the inside backers who, you know, the Broncos had a top 10 run defense, top 5 run defense last year in the National Football League, and you got to factor that in your consideration and game plan. And I think right now when you're looking as an offensive coordinator, where are some areas where we can attack on the Broncos? Well, they just traded Aqib Talib in the offseason. Yeah. Maybe go at Bradley Roby a little bit. Chris Harris Jr. is going to move inside and outside. They brought in Tremaine Brock, who used to play for the 49ers, and they also acquired Adam Pac-Man Jones. I would test out the secondary a little bit early on if I'm Pete Carroll and the Seahawks offense, because at that point, you know, why not? Why not test and see if really the departure of Aqib Talib is something that will hurt the Broncos overall?
I think it's a great point. And Chris Harris is a good defensive matchup against Doug Baldwin, who's obviously our most effective wide receiver, which just brings it back to what you said about Brandon Marshall. Can he be effective at the age of 75 or whatever he is? I believe 34. And also the newly re-signed Tyler Lockett. Yep. Can he be as effective as he was as a rookie and really show that spark and speed against, as you were saying, Pac-Man Jones, who is just elderly as Brandon Marshall or Roby or these guys who are not Chris Harris, who are not elite defensive backs?
Yeah, and I'm going to continue on to Spike's point about having the run game going, and especially against a tough Broncos run defense. And they need to keep the ball in the offensive hand, in the offense's hands, because of that thin air in Denver. You keep the defense off the field, keep them rested, because you know you don't know, you know, how long you're going to have the ball if the running game's not effective. So you need to make sure you mix in some pass plays, you mix in some runs, and get a good balance and keep the offense flowing and chew on that time of possession.
And I think that's important, yeah, especially, you know, with a young running back in Penny, you know, a guy who does have that explosive ability to him. And a lot of the offense is also set up by utilizing a fullback at times. And I think with the run game as well, you don't just have to factor in Rashad Penny. And I think on the Broncos side of the ball, one of the biggest keys to the game is containing Russell Wilson. If your DNs don't get contained on Russell Wilson, he can hurt you on the ground with his legs. And just his ability to be mobile can obviously set up, you know, pass plays even further. So the Broncos defensive backs this week have to cover a little extra longer. In all honesty, looking at the receiver matchup, I could honestly see Chris Harris Jr. covering a guy like Tyler Lockett, because I think they're, you know, similar in size. I think you might see Robion Baldwin, but if Chris Harris is going to follow the number one receiver around, it's going to be Doug Baldwin, and then I think you're going to see a lot of Brandon Marshall lined up on the inside, where you're going to see a matchup against Tremaine Brock, or even a Pac-Man Jones, or even a young safety and Justin Simmons, or a Will Parks, or Demonte Thomas. You know, they think the Broncos have a lot of, you know, options at this point. You know, we talk about tight end, you know, with the departure of Jimmy Graham, what weapons do they have at tight end, and how can they play a big role in the outcome of this game?
Well, I think, I mean, you look at Nick Vannett and you look at Will Disley, and Vannett's very versatile. He can bring a lot of things to the table, but he isn't exceptional as a pass catcher, as a field stretching option. And then Disley is sort of in that Zach Miller blocking tight end role. He's not a game breaking receiver. And Brian Schottenheimer hasn't talked about wanting game breaking receivers from the tight end position, which is a little disappointing after Jimmy Graham finally came into his own last year as a red zone threat. So we don't really have that great inside big body option unless, as you said, we end up seeing Brandon Marshall playing more inside. That's actually something that Seahawks fans are really interested in seeing right now. How is Brian Schottenheimer going to get a big receiving target inside the hashes? And like, I think it's going to have to be Brandon Marshall if it's anybody. And this is a great first opportunity to see if that's what happens.
Well, I think for the Broncos in this game, covering tight ends has been a big struggle for them over the course of the last couple of seasons. And I think the Broncos are very high on Will Parks and Demonte Thomas to be able to play that role with Sua Cravens heading to injured reserve. I'd say this, the key to the game for the Denver Broncos, and we'll leave it at that, is if you contain Russell Wilson and you get pressure on him, force him to throw the ball into the secondary, I think you can have a lot of success. But the key is, if you break contain, you're going to allow Russell Wilson to run on the outside for additional yardage, and that's something that you can't have. So if you buckle down your outside contain guys and you play them tight and they get heel depth after they strike the outside shoulder, if they get to the quarterback, if you can get to Russell Wilson, you can cause a lot of problems. The Broncos didn't get to him in Super Bowl 48, and that's why he had a field day against the secondary. He didn't generate pressure, and it was quick throwing, it was a quick passing game, and that's where they had a lot of success. So this matchup surely looks to be very, very impressive. If the Broncos can sack Russell Wilson at least three times, I think the chances for the Broncos to win this game can be very high. And I think for the Broncos, if they struggle to contain Russell Wilson, and if the offense can't convert on third down situations, it could be a tough game for the Broncos as well. And that would be our keys to the game here for our Locked On Broncos, Locked On Seahawks crossover episode here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Every Wednesday, it is a crossover show. The Broncos, the Seahawks, they kick off this Sunday, 2:25 p.m. Mountain Time kickoff at Broncos Stadium, Mile High. If you're not in Denver, you can catch the game on Fox as well. So for the listeners of Locked On Broncos, you can follow me on Locked On Seahawks. You can follow me at Cody Rourke NFL, and you can follow the show at Locked On Broncos. For the Locked On Broncos listeners, guys, where can they follow you guys and get your work?
it's going to be at Lock Seahawks for the show's Twitter account. You can follow me, Grant Goldberg, on Twitter at Grant Goldberg, just my name. And you can follow Spike on Twitter at Spike Friedman, just his name. And you can follow the show's Facebook page on Facebook at Locked On Seahawks. We have a Locked On Seahawks group you can join on Facebook, and we're getting that going. We're getting that growing, and it's very exciting times. Make sure you're following with the show.
We'll be live tweeting the game. I look forward, Grant and Spike, to tweeting and talking about the game with you guys. I'll probably be doing a post-game Periscope as long as an episode of Locked On Broncos breaking down the entire game. I really appreciate doing these crossovers. You guys are awesome. I love the work you guys are doing over there at Locked On Seahawks. You guys are keeping me informed. I get a lot of inside intel from you guys, so keep it up. And look forward to this Sunday's matchup. For the Locked On Podcast Network, I'm Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos, saying goodbye for Grant and Spike of Locked On Seahawks. We'll see you again.